should we worry about how the karma is affecting us, means past karma is affecting us, or is this practice sufficient enough to take care of that? Like, is it necessary to worry about such things, like how the karma is playing out in your life?
Yes, all it really you have to do is just be aware right now of what the feeling, the reality of now. You don't need to know why. It's just like this. So you know, when we start asking why, then we try to analyze and we get caught up in our own thinking mind again. Where when we just recognize this awareness, then you just recognize it's like this, then you're aware of the impermanence of what you're feeling. And that's a direct knowing, you know. But as soon as you try to figure out why you feel like this, then it goes back into the self-view.
What I found a little frustrating of in Buddhism is, you know, for being an arahant in the commentary, you need to practice it's one uncountable, like 400,000 eons, and for Pachika Buddha, double of this, it is so incredibly long. You know, when you one eon is already so long, and then you say 400, and one uncountable. Only for being alive, you know, you say maybe, you know, this is very frustrating, dude. This is extreme, unbelievable long time.
Yeah, the religions tend to use hyperbole, you know, exaggeration. Because actually, the Buddha's teaching about here and now, and like when, you know, if you like the 10 fetters. That, you know, as you let go of these 10 fetters, then that's arahantship. There's 12, you know, formally, the formal is the Four Noble Truths, three aspects to each truth, 12 insights, arahantship. So, I mean,
but you need the paramis for it.
Yeah, but then, you see, that's something you create. You know, you read it in a book and you think, how many. Do I only have a million lifetimes more before?
When I was in the Tibetan tradition, this is the problem that I was saying, that I need three counts. You should be aiming for three counts eons in the future to attain samas and Buddhahood. And then the teacher, you know, you can attain arahantship in one lifetime. That sounds good.
Yeah, because that's the way language works, you know, time and.
But when I come here now, I'm hearing, like, you know, again, I can't see on screen.
Yeah, and time is another empty condition, you know. It's the creation. So, like time is. It's akalika dhamma, akaliko, is timeless. Well, what is that? You know, because your body's about time, is born, it's this age, it gets old and dies, or sensory experience is always about beginning and ending, and then we live, and our reality is time. We have clocks and calendars and diaries and then, you know, ancient time, modern time, and past history, and the future. You know, we always look to the future where, for, you know, success and fulfillment, or fear that we'll fail. You know, when you die, you know, will you go to hell or to heaven, or be reborn in some low state, or will you... Is there just nothing? Is there just oblivion? You know, when you're dead, that's finished. Don't worry about it. Then you don't know. You're not dead yet. You're still breathing in human form. No matter what anybody tells you about you being reincarnated, or you'll go to heaven or hell, or there's nothing, you're just oblivion. the reality of this moment for all of us is we don't know, because we haven't died, physically died. So then they well, then you observe death, not from, because you have to wait till your body dies, but you can observe the cessation of conditions in your mind. It's the same thing. Death, physical death, is just cessation, the end of the form. You know, in other words, you know, it's no longer conscious form, just decaying conditions. And so, so then, you know, you don't have to wait for that. You can have the insight through just observing your own thoughts or emotions, because the arising, ceasing applies to, that's the pattern of all conditioned phenomena. You know, it's not a matter of just physical. And if you begin to, like Lumpo Cha used to say, die before you die. You know, so this you observe death before your physical body dies. And that's like Nirodha, the cessation of condition. You have insight, you observe the death of, or the end of a arrow or a thought or a feeling. And as you kind of make note of it, you know, then fear of death falls away, because you just, you know, it's what ways and cause operate. But you're observing death, you're not dying with each, you know, you don't go into oblivion every time a thought passes through your mind. There's still consciousness that has a continuity that allows birth and death to take place, or beginning and ending. And so your refuge is in this consciousness rather than in the particular condition that arises and ceases. See, then they call it amatatama, or the deathless reality. And that's where when we think of anatta or no self, people find that difficult, because we seem to be a separate self. The one thing I know is that I'm this person here, and I feel this way, and I'm separate from you. But if you recognize anatta, non-self, you let go of thinking and attachment to memories and views about yourself. You're not annihilating them, you're just releasing your blind holding. What's left when there's no self is a conscious awareness. And it's not a self. For, you know, if I say that's mine, then I'm creating a self into it. So you don't create anything, and you just recognize it and appreciate it, because it is a matadhamma. It's the deathless rather than just an empty state of nothingness, or, you know, you don't become unconscious and fall asleep. There's an alert awareness that sustains itself. We don't create it. It's not with what we create. It's what happens when we stop creating, what we recognize. So like in the ten fetters and the four stages, like arahant would be total letting go of the fetters, no longer deluded in any way or attached to them. So there'd be pure conscious awareness in an individual form, but it wouldn't be a person. You know, it's not a person anymore, it's reality. But then we can say, so-and-so is an arahant, then we create then we form a sense of somebody has become one, because that's how language works. You know, language is, it has that limitation. You know, it's all about, you know, creating forms. So, I think in Visuddhi Magga, one of those, it says, there's the path, but nobody, there's nobody on the path. And I used to think, that's kind of depressing. You know, there's this path, nobody's going on it.
Suffering is, but there's no sufferer. The path is, but no one walks the path.
And you know, they realize that the path, there's no, nobody, there's no person on it anymore. There is this, which is reality, but you're not creating anybody to be walking on this path. And this is where your thinking mind stops. But notice there, your thinking mind can only go so far, and then you have to let it go. Because thinking is a creation, you know, so we create languages, and they're useful, but they're also created for living in the world, and about discrimination, and quality, quantity. It's about, this is bigger than that, or quality, this is better than that, or, you know, it's blue or red, or it's form, or, you know, it's shape and form is a conditioned realm, and we create that. And language is how we bind ourselves to forms as our real world. And so, like in Paticca-samuppada, you know, your dependent origination, it's an exploration of that process from avijja, bhajya-sankhara, sankhara-bhajya-vijnana. As long as there's ignorance of Dhamma, then that influences how we interpret everything. And it always ends up with dukkha. Sokha pariteva tukha tomana upaya. You know, you start out with avijja, and the result is dukkha. It's not like avijja, is not understanding Dhamma, not knowing reality. And then it gives that whole structure of, you know, how from consciousness, namarupa, salayatana, pasavedana, danha, upatana, and so forth. That you, so then you can kind of explore that in your mind. Like Ajahn Chah is always talking about upadhan, attachment out of ignorance. Dhanha upadhan. And so like you've got the desire and attachment to desire. And that you can, you know, that's a good place to start. Just change your attitude towards desire to, you know, because sometimes with the English language we tend to, desire has a kind of pejorative meaning, you know. You say somebody has a lot of desires, you're not complimenting them. So, you know, the greedy people. But this is a desire realm, and desire is like this. It has desire for sense pleasures, desire for becoming something. You know, you're not content with the way you are. You desire to become rich or powerful or enlightened, or desire to become an arahant. Bhavananha, vipodana, desire to get rid of things, you know. You want to get rid of your anger, get rid of your doubts or worries, and emotional states, you don't like them, you want to get rid of them, it's a desire. And it can be very righteous, you know, get rid of greed seems, you know, that's going the right way. We shouldn't be greedy. We should be content with our requisites, whatever they might be, and then we feel guilty because we're not, We want to get rid of greed so we can be content, and you'll never succeed in that. But it's through observing, like, dunha, because desire can't see desire, but awareness can know desires like this. Kama dunha, pava dunha, vipava dunha. You can actually, you know, it's very clearly stated in the Second Noble Truth. You know, I found that those three categories very helpful, because like vipava dunha, or desire to get rid of things, was my big problem. I was a control freak. I was always trying to control things and get rid of bad mental states, or, you know, get rid of suffering, get rid of greed, hatred, delusion. It was, you know, wanting to become perfect. Power done. I wanted to become free from these forces by annihilating them. And of course, you can't do it on that way, because I didn't understand that desire. And then I didn't understand upadana, or attachment to desire. So I spent 2 years just contemplating paticca samuppada in my mind, and I found it very helpful, you know, and because these teachings are really skillful means to explore consciousness. Like the Four Noble Truths, paticca samuppada, and then the ten fetters, the four stages. You know, like you've got the first three fetters are like sakiditi, silabhata, brahmas, vichikicca, and they're all created by human beings. They're not, you know, they're creations of that we create a self, we create a world, we create a society, we create a language. So these are all, you know, common to, we have different languages or whatever, but the whole point is that these are creations by human beings after they're born, where your body is natural. You know, it's a tamacha. It's like, you know, it is what it is, human body and consciousness. And this is a sense realm, so you're going to feel vedana. But then we create this, because we have memory and language, and we have desires, and we don't understand ourselves, so we create the world in our minds. And then, like in paticca samuppada, as you explore that, then it gives you ways of investigating, get kind of different perspectives on the same thing, but you're always looking here. It's not like intellectual, but it's intuitive. What is upatana? And what is letting go? Because the insight into the signal to let go of this grasping, and then letting go, ploy one, is like, is it annihilating desire? You know, getting rid of it? Or is it just like this, you know? Let go of this clock. I don't have to throw it away, I can just set it down. I'm no longer clinging to that clock. Because it's useful, you know, I can hold it when I need it, but I'm not clinging out of ignorance, you know. And so like letting go is like learning to just let things be what they are in your mind, you know. You're not trying to annihilate them, but you're letting them be, and then they teach you about impermanence, and show you the path of the way to Nirodha, or the cessation of maybe anger or lust or doubt or worry or your cultural conditioning. You know, you learn how to recognize it, and you're letting go. You're not trying to destroy it, but you're no longer just blindly holding on to things like you were. And then the Nirodha side of it is where, you know, when you are mindful, then the whole thing collapses. So you have sankhara, nirodha, and so forth. And so then it's not about annihilating, it's the cessation of the world we create. And then that leads to peace and wisdom. So there's like this awakenness, you know, wake up kind of teaching. It's just learning how to reflect and observe your own attachments. It's not about trying to become someone who's not attached to anything, but testing it out, experimenting. Like, it's all about getting the yoni soul, you know, that kind of going deep and observing and something, you know, it's not just an intellectual understanding, profound. And then you have insight knowledge rather than just a lot of knowledge about Buddhism. Yes, I think anyway, anything I say before reflection, you know, I'm not trying to, I'm just trying to encourage you to trust yourself more to be this knowing, observing, other than, you know, spending your monastic life always trying to get things or get rid of things, which is easy to do, you know. You try to get rid of your kilesas and try to become an arahant, and you know, people that try to do that never succeed, and they become disillusioned with it. And so it's like encouraging you to, like, just wake up and puto, and then this kind of empowering you to use these forms, these teachings, for wisdom rather than just accumulating more knowledge about Buddhism. They're actually aids, helpful directions, and they're very skillful. I don't see anything else that could compare, you know, the practical clarity of the Buddha's teaching. And then it gives you vocabulary, it gives you vinaya, it gives you a way of living your life that is blameless. You know, if you live rightly in the monastic form, it's a blameless way to live. But you're not rejecting society, you're enhancing it. Like the Sangha in Thailand enhances Thailand. It's not like, even though, you know, people say, you know, there's corrupt monks, but there's bound to be, you know, individuals are corruptible, but the teaching here is pure. You know, it's not a corrupt teaching in any way. And what you do is up to you, really. You know, I can't force you to practice. Like tyrannize you.
You inspire us. That's what we need.